0-1 to Poole. In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
And we're back here with Kyle Reese from the Red Bird Daily. Kyle R416 on Twitter, doing our normal talk of the minor leagues. And Kyle, the minor leagues are, for the most part, wrapped. We got a playoff series in Memphis and a little bit of activity there. But, you know, on just if you wanted to take the broad view of this year for the system, what was it? Was it a good year, do you think, overall?
Yeah, for sure. So I, one of the things I wanted to do tonight, I wanted to tally up their record. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't include the Gulf Coast League teams or the Dominican Summer League team, because that's so far out of the way, and there's so much emphasis on development and working on things. Like, it's almost not even real baseball. I know that sounds terrible, but the field conditions are tough. There's a lot of things there that might skew how a team is doing. So I will give a real quick. GCL went 26-29, and the Dominican Summer League team went 30-40. So they were a combined 56-69 in their short seasons. But the four full season clubs and then the two top rookie level clubs, State College and Johnson City, as State College played their last game of the season tonight, and they lost 6-1. But the final final record for the Cardinals' top six farm teams ended up being 384-312, which is 62 games over. Memphis finished 41 games over. So that's 21 games over for the other five teams, which it might not seem like a lot, you know, a little 4-1 win over 500 for each team, you know, on average. But that's really, really good in the minor leagues. Like, you don't get that very often. The only team that was below 500 was Johnson City. They were 33-34, so they were right at the line. And then Peoria, they were 30-39 in the first half, and then 39-31 in the second half. So they were also one game underneath. So that means there were only two of the top six teams in the organization. And to me, those are the teams that matter when you start to look at win and loss. You know, there only two teams were under 500, and they were each one game under 500. So that's some really impressive stuff. That's a really, really good year. And also, Palm Beach ends up being the co-champion of the Florida State League, which they had to cancel the championship game because of the terrible situation with the hurricane in Florida. And then Peoria lost tonight. They're in the playoffs, and Memphis is losing pretty bad right now. I think not pretty bad. It's 4-0, but they're in the ninth inning, and that game looks like it's about ready to be wrapped up. They might still be being no-hit, too.
No, they got a hit.
Oh, no, they got a hit.
Yeah, they got another one.
My bad. Patrick Wisdom, huh? Well, I guess we'll get into that later. So anyways, yes, as I kind of go over record by record, it's been a really, really solid year in the minor league system for the Cardinals.
And that's good to hear, because it feels like, you know, there was that push of talent that was that has come up already, you know, with Scotty, you know, unfortunately, you know, Tavares when he was involved, you know, some of the others, Alex Reyes already to the big leagues, things of that nature. So it's good to see that there's enough talent still to come, and I think we've talked about it a lot this year, so we've kind of got that feeling, but there's talent yet to come that perhaps we won't have another one of those donut holes that Derek Gould used to refer to, that there'll be a consistent waves of talent.
Yeah, that is what it looks like. It is interesting. So on the top 30 list, you still have, because they're still rookie eligible, you still have Carson Kelly on the list, and Harrison Bader's still on the list. And, of course, by the end of the month, neither of those guys will be eligible. And that means that of the Red Bird Daily rankings are top 30. That means that at the beginning of the year and at the midseason rankings, six of the top 30 guys are off that list. You know, like I said, once Bader and Kelly become eligible, there'll be two. Luke Weaver. So, of course, Bader and Kelly. Kelly was the second best prospect on my list. And then Bader was the sixth best prospect on my list, so they'll go. And then eighth overall prospect, Paul DeJong will be off. Luke Weaver, who was four, will be off. And Luke Voigt, who's 26, just came off the list. And then Eli Alvarez, who was just traded. So that means that six of the top 30 prospects on my personal list are off the list. And it's really been interesting to watch and decide who I've plugged in those six spots. It, you know, right now it doesn't look like there's going to be that donut hole. There, the talent in the top 30 list that I have is spread out pretty well. It's still top heavy. Still a lot of guys who will probably be in Memphis next year knocking on the door. And then, you know, Springfield should have a pretty solid little roster. But there is a little concern, at least from my perspective, from an offensive standpoint, mm-hmm. at the lower levels. There's still a lot to be paved out there. There are still some really interesting prospects. A lot, in my opinion, is going to depend on the development of Bryce Denton. You know, he's still only 19 years old and struggled at short season. But, you know, he's going to be a big key on what kind of hole this offense in the minor league system ends up being. They have pitching for days. They generate pitching. I don't see that being a problem in a very, very long time. Maybe 4 years down the road. But the offense at the lower levels next year will be a really interesting thing to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, I mean, again, some younger guys are in the big leagues, but we don't know if they'll stay there. I mean, we don't know what this offseason's going to hold, if they'll go out and get a big bat and kind of mitigate some of that need for talent to come up, or, you know, if they'll not do anything. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what happens, but, you know, with guys like Piscotty and Pham and Kelly and already up in the big leagues, you know, in theory, some of those guys got to get established, and if they do, you might not need offensive reinforcements as much for a little while, but we'll see. I mean, that's always kind of, you think, you don't know what you have until the next season rolls around, and I think this season has kind of proven that. You mentioned Eli Alvarez, who was traded this week, just a couple days ago, for one Nicasio. I realize.
I always say Nicasio, but Nicasio. I also don't always say Robert. So
I think it is Nicasio. I just hadn't had a chance to actually say it since the trade was made. I've just written it a couple of times. It was an interesting trade, and let's not. I don't want to really focus on the major league side of things of that, but I mean, what does that say about Alvarez and where he was and maybe how the organization is valuing people?
It's really interesting. So I can't get a gauge on how I feel like they value Eli Alvarez. I just think back to last year when they added him to the 40-man, and there were some other people that they might have been able to add, you know, a couple people that they could have subtracted. And it goes to show you how volatile the prospect game is. Mm-hmm. A year ago, it looked like Eli Alvarez, a lot of people started putting Eli in their top 10 list. And he starts at Double-A. He has a rough start. He starts getting it together, breaks an ankle, is out for 2 months, and then comes back late in the game and late in the season and struggles. I keep thinking to myself, one thing that changes the value of Eli Alvarez, because I'd like to think the Cardinals aren't naive enough to put too much stock in how he did this year. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I keep overlooking, the Cardinals have a second baseman also playing at Springfield named Darren Seferina. And the more I think about it, the play of Darren Seferina down the stretch, and not even down the stretch, during his 2017 campaign, really, really changes the system's value, or changes Eli Alvarez's value to this system. Eli Alvarez, I think we've talked about him before. He can make some really flashy plays. He's fast. He's quick to his sides. But with all that in mind, he is as sketchy as you can imagine of a second baseman. He has a strong arm, but he likes to throw off balance, which means he throws the ball wild sometimes. But his bat is so solid, and it's a gap bat, and with his speed, it's dangerous. You know, I was surprised by the move. Like you said, we'll avoid the whole what it means for the major league team. I was surprised more because he just there's too much talent there for the Cardinals to move at the high level he was at. Like normally those guys that get moved are at the lower levels. Like I think about Malik Collimore for
Broxton.
For Broxton. Who was Axford? Oh, Blazek. It was Blazek, yeah, Axford, sure. Which is funny because Michael Blazek came in and led up the hit to Patrick Wisdom tonight. And then he got rocked earlier in the year by the Cardinals. But getting back to it. Yeah, so I think about like Malik Collimore, who was traded for Jonathan Broxton. He was a long ways away. Like there were years of padding to say, all right, at least if we trade Broxton, this isn't going to come back to get us right away. There's a really good chance that with what's going on in Philadelphia, you know, at some point next year, Eli Alvarez is playing for Philadelphia. And to only get a little over three weeks of a major league return for that with no playoff eligibility there, it was really weird. And, you know, I can't really get a grasp on it. And I'm really anxious to see what kind of year Eli Alvarez has in 2018 because he has all of the tools. Except for maybe what's going on between his head and maybe a focus issue or a dedication issue. And if it wasn't for that, I mean, I really do think that this entire situation would be a little different. I don't think the Cardinals would have traded him. But I think it goes to show you that the price of prospects or the price of major league talent, even for like the least amount of major league talent, which is what happens here with Juan Nicasio, is really, really high because Eli Alvarez is a solid prospect. So that's how I view it.
Yeah, and I mean we know that the 40 man is interesting right now, and there's going to have to be some changes. I mean, was this an indication that they thought they needed to clear it up and better to get something for him than nothing by letting him go at the end of the season? Because I mean, the way you're talking, it sounds like he should have been one that they would have protected and definitely not just, letting loose in the wild.
I think that's a really, really tight read, and I hadn't thought about this until right now, but I wonder how much of this is in reaction to what happened with Alan Cordoba last year. Mm. You know, part of me thinks that a year ago, if they wouldn't have lost Alan Cordoba in the Rule 5, that they just would have held on to Eli Alvarez and just tried to pass him through waivers, thinking, all right, no team's going to pick, just see what happens with the Rule 5 and all that stuff, thinking, all right, no team's going to pick up this guy. He's not major league ready. You know, he'll slip through the Rule 5 or he'll go to a team and be there for a little bit, and then we'll get him back. I wonder how much of it is, all right, last year we learned that guys with pure hit tools, because that's what Alan Cordoba has. He has a pure hit tool, it's just that it's not developed. That's what Eli Alvarez has. He has a pure hit tool, but it's just not fully developed. Teams will take that in the Rule 5, and you just brought it up. I think that's a really great read. I think they thought maybe we'll pull this guy off of the 40-man, and they know pulling him off the 40-man, somebody's going to pick him up.
Well, and I wonder also if this is a somewhat reaction to Colton Wong. Last year, as you said, Colton kind of had a kind of off year, kind of lost year. Didn't really know if he was ever going to develop, and so they put Alvarez on the 40-man because they thought they might need a replacement fairly soon. But now Wong seems to have settled in, and it's going to be the, in theory, second baseman for a long period of time. And like you said, others developing around.
Yeah,
somebody had to go.
Yeah, there are plenty of guys who can play second base in the system right now, and they might not be able to play it at the level that, or at least offensively, at the profile of second baseman that Eli Alvarez, has the potential to profile at. But you have guys that are right there with Alex Mejia, who might not be an everyday player, but he can play second base in a pinch, and Breivik Valera, who can play second. He's a really, really good defensive second baseman, but can play second base if you need him for a 10-day stint. That's a really solid read too. I think that with Colton Wong locked up and proving what he's capable of this year, you have a little bit more wiggle room with being able to trade Alvarez and having Darren Seferina right there knocking on the door. Not when I say knocking on the door, I mean knocking on the prospect door that Alvarez had.
You spoke of Mejia, you spoke of Valera, both of which are now in the major leagues. We saw Jack Flaherty, we've seen Sandy Alcantara. Those four, for the most part, are guys that we hadn't seen yet, and in the last couple of weeks have finally gotten a chance to see. And I know you've been on vacation somewhat, but if you've gotten a chance to see these guys on the big league level, and mainly probably Flaherty, because he's had the most exposure, how are they taking to the big leagues? Are they developing kind of the way you thought they would?
I'll tell you, before we move on to Flaherty, the one guy, and he wasn't a September call-up, but how good has Ryan Sheriff been?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I am so impressed with Ryan Sheriff. I just, you know, he's come in some tough situations, and he seems unfazed. And that's, you know, when we talked about him before, that was one of the things that I was really interested in. You know, I thought he'd be really good against righties. I thought he'd be really good against lefties. You just never know how somebody with, you know, not fringy stuff, but kind of fringy stuff, and in the grand scheme of what the relief, what a bullpen looks like nowadays, where it seems like everyone's throwing in the high 90s. But he's impressed me more than anyone. He looks set, he looks solid, and he looks like a bullpen fixture, barring being used 83 times a season, 130 times in a season.
But that would never happen.
It would never happen. Never, ever, ever. But he looks like he's going to stay. I did not get to watch Flaherty's start on Friday night, except for the first inning, and I watched innings 3, 4, and 5 last night. And what really surprised me, and I tweeted it out, is Flaherty and Kelly were not on the same page last night, and I was so confused by that. And then I started thinking to myself, well, I wonder how many starts Flaherty's had with Kelly catching him. I'm sure somebody's done the groundwork, and I still haven't. But, you know, Flaherty made, I think, 12 starts at AAA this year, and I wouldn't be surprised if less than half of those are with Kelly. Now, the main issue that I have is you have to come up and trust your catcher. And sure, if it was Yadi, he probably would have. But Kelly was getting frustrated. Flaherty was overthrowing and shaking Kelly off, and that was so evident in the fourth and fifth innings when Flaherty really labored. I think he's overthrowing his breaking pitches, and I think he's trying too hard to gas it up. And I think if you use the context clues from his Memphis debut, and watching those first couple Memphis starts, I think he's doing the exact same thing he did at Memphis, where he's just trying to be too perfect. And I also think that there's fatigue in that arm. He's pitched more than he's ever pitched. And I just think that it's kind of a weird little thing going on. I do think, you know, he gets one more start with Yadi as a catcher. I'll be anxious to see how that goes, because he won't shake off Yadi. I would almost guarantee that. I didn't get to watch much of Friday's start, so I'll leave that to the people who did get to watch it. But I'm anxious to see how he rebounds. And, you know, he pitched really well against the Padres. It's not to diminish his five-inning performance against them, but he just needs to relax up there a little bit, because I think he's pitching way too tense. And other than that, like, the guys who have been called up, you know, I think they're doing fine. Alcantara, that was exactly what I would have expected out of his debut. I would have expected him to impress and let up a home run, because that's just kind of what his deal is right now. There's still a lot of work to be done. I know a lot of people want him in late inning situations right now, and, you know, I don't. I would not feel comfortable. So the Cardinals are losing 1-0 to the Padres right now, and say you needed to turn to Sandy Alcantara in the seventh inning. I don't know if that's something that I would feel comfortable doing. But, you know, he's been fine. You can see right away where he needs to make growth, where he needs to get better. And, you know, Breivik Valera's look bad in his small little taste, which I also expect to kind of clean up a little bit. But, yeah, there's some talent there. The pitching's good. I'm anxious to see what happens when Memphis' season's over and who comes up, you know, and take it from there.
Just a quick, as you were talking, just a quick look at some box scores. And the last time, excuse me, last time Flaherty pitched to Kelly was July 4th.
Okay.
And that would have meant at most, I'm not going back, but at most 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, at most of them would have been 6 starts in Memphis with Kelly. So not enough to, as you said, kind of have that rapport that you would expect. But you're right. He should have. It was a little weird to me. Of course, I was half asleep watching this, and I'm no I'm no expert at all. But it felt like last night, at least, he couldn't put it anybody. He couldn't get it past anybody. They were fouling a lot of pitches off with two strikes and stuff like that. And so I was a little surprised to see how many strikeouts he had had over his two starts. Also, really weird. He reminded me of Bud Smith. That was
yes. Just,
I don't know. Obviously, his stuff is different. Obviously, he pitches with a different hand. I don't. It must be just a look. But I was watching. I was like, man, why am I thinking of Bud Smith? So
it's funny you bring that up because at one point, one of these weeks, and I'll have to go back and look when I was doing the prospect weekly awards. I said that he reminds me. His motion reminds me of Mark Mulder's. It's the way he finishes. But you're I think you're more correct. Bud Smith, it's the arm angle and the finish that is to me, and you know, like the straight up pitching style that is reminiscent of both those guys. To me, he from behind he looks like a right handed version of Mark Mulder. But I love that Bud Smith call. That's interesting stuff.
Yeah, apparently things happen when you're half asleep. So and
yes.
I still remember watching Bud Smith's no hitter against the Padres, or at least part of it. So maybe the fact that they were in San Diego reminded me of something. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the guy that is not in St. Louis yet, and apparently, at least right now, looks like he will not be, and that is Austin Gomber. Austin Gomber, who had a great end of the year. He was Pitcher of the Month for the organization in August. He was Texas League Pitcher of the Month for August. He has to be added to the 40-man, very much like Sandy Alcantara would be. All of these factors would make you think that he's going to St. Louis. If not going to St. Louis, then he's going to fill in at Memphis because Cardinals have taken a lot from the Redbirds and they are trying to win a championship in the playoffs. So you think a guy like that could go and get a little AAA experience. But neither is the case right now, and that just seems a little weird.
It's really weird. I hadn't thought about this until earlier today. But in Game 3 of the Memphis Sky Sox playoff series, Ryan Helsley is getting the start. Hmm. And I obviously am the Helsley homer of all homers. But he started the year at Palm Beach, and I kept saying over and over again, how come this guy hasn't been promoted to Springfield yet? He needs to be at Springfield. And then he pitches only a little over a handful of starts at Springfield. And goes to Memphis when Jack Flaherty gets promoted to the St. Louis Cardinals, and that's really interesting to me because Helsley still has another year before you even need to worry about him on the 40 man, and Gomber pitched so lights out. It's a really really weird thing. You know, maybe they were a little worried about Gomber's innings, which does not check out at all. You know, last year he threw 127. The year before, he threw 135, and this year he had thrown 143. And he also had a break in the middle of the season while he was dealing with a non-arm-related injury. I believe it was either a groin or a hamstring. It's a really, really peculiar thing. And for him to not even go to Memphis, as you mentioned, does not make any sense to me. It makes you kind of wonder. There was reports early in the year that there was turmoil because the Cardinals were trying to mess with his throwing mechanic. And he wasn't successful with it, so the rumor is that he just ignored it and went back to pitching how he knows how to pitch, and he pitched really great after he went back to throwing how he threw. It makes you wonder if maybe there's a little organizational animosity. That is super drama and super speculative, but it's a really peculiar situation because to me, I would love to see him at the major league level. I'd love to see him at Memphis right now. I would have loved to have seen him pitching instead of Kevin Hergett tonight for Memphis, or pitching in relief of Kevin Hergett tonight in Memphis. But, you know, I mentioned a second ago, that I don't feel comfortable with Sandy Alcantara coming into a game in this situation, 1-0 game, down 1-0 or down, up 1-0 in the seventh or sixth inning. I don't feel that way about Austin Gomber. I would love to see Austin Gomber in that situation to see how he reacts. And it's really peculiar. This team has a lot of talent at the top level of the minor league system. And obviously you can only carry 25 guys at the major league level. It's going to be really interesting this offseason, as everyone knows, to watch how this all shakes out. I'm anxious and baffled and a little scared for some of my favorite players, but Gomber will be the one. Gomber, he'll be like the litmus test, in my opinion, of what this offseason is going to look like for prospects. Because, if they make a move, I could definitely see Gomber being one of the guys that they try to move. And if he isn't moved early, because he has to be moved before the Rule 5 draft, if he isn't added to the 40-man, then there's a whole nother set of questions that'll need to be asked. So it's Austin Gomber handled it really well. I saw on Twitter he said, going back home to Orlando, ready to get the offseason underway. That's awesome. But he has to be frustrated about not getting any type of promotion while other prospects are literally jumping him. So I'm perplexed, and as a fan and a student of minor league baseball, a little heartbroken I didn't get to see what he looked like at the next level this year.
Yeah, I mean, I could almost understand not moving him to St. Louis, if only because, the 40-man's the way it is. I don't know that there's a lot of...
Yeah.
I mean, you got Mike Myers, who I think you could get rid of without any problem. But other than that, there's just not necessarily a whole lot of just pieces you just want to flat out get rid of. And so putting him on the 40-man because of that might be a problem. But not running him to Memphis and giving them a boost, giving him a little reward, that is very strange. And like you said, maybe it is a little retribution for going his own way. But, that's a little short. That's very short-sighted for the organization. If, he's bad doing it your way, he's good doing it his way. Unless there's some really extenuating circumstances, let him do it his way.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, again, I know there's a lot of we've covered some stuff. I look forward to we'll talk some about the 40-man probably as the season winds down, maybe. But overall, and then I know you're going to do a lot of work as the season's done and try to see how things really shook out and really looked at. But overall, if you were to pick your most surprising, most disappointing player for the year, who do you think they'd be?
I keep with the disappointing thing, and I beat him to death. And I'm gonna as I say Ronnie Williams, I'm gonna try to also think of someone else. But I just think about Ronnie Williams, mm-hmm. and I watch him pitch for Peoria again tonight. A right-handed pitcher. Again, he had creeped into everyone's top 25 at least. He was up in the top 20 for some outlets. He was terrible. And it's not a velocity issue. It's something else. And I can't figure out what it is. It doesn't seem like the Cardinals can figure out what it is. It doesn't seem like he can figure out what it is. And all of that it's a bummer. Because I was really, really rooting for him. I was hoping the best for him. And it's just been a rough year for him. But I'll go back. I'll come up with somebody a little bit better. Because, like I said, I beat up on poor Ronnie Williams all the time. Easily the biggest surprise is Oscar Mercado. There's no way it's anyone else. He left for dead. He was a prospect left for dead. And he had just an amazing year. He was up at the top of the Texas League in stolen bases. He mixed in a little bit more power towards the end of the year, and you could see his swing change. There isn't anyone out there now who doubts his ability to play center field. And only doing it for 1 year is a really – one full season now is a really, really incredible thing. And he's young, and he's athletic, and while his second half he dipped a little bit, it looks like he's on a solid track now. And again, it'll be interesting to see what his if he's still in the organization, what his 2018 season looks like at Memphis. I'm really excited about that. I have a feeling that he's going to go back this offseason and put on a little bit of bulk. And I don't know how that'll translate, but I know that like physically he needs a little bit more bulk to make it through an entire season. But he, what he's been able to do for himself and for the organization is by far the most endearing and surprising turn of events. Looking back on, you know, this time in 2016, that's just, it's just fantastic. Yeah, again, I'll take a step back and I will say another thing that really disappointed me. And, you know, I know a lot of people say Bryce Denton. There's some people who might say the play of Edmundo Sosa, who also lost a bunch of time to injury. To me, one of the big disappointments is Junior Fernandez. He, again, this is me kind of mining more than anything, because he did have a really solid season at Palm Beach. But to see him get hurt when he was and he kind of rode a roller coaster this year. He was successful about half the time and got rocked about half the time. But this was going to be a big year for him. He had started falling down prospect ranking lists. A lot of people were saying this is a guy who will that he is a player who will only be able to pitch out of the bullpen. And then early on in the year, he threw some dynamic starts. He threw the first complete game, nine-inning complete game of his career. And then he started falling off and getting tired and then was out for the rest of the year with an arm issue. And I'm, you know, it's a tough thing to say you're disappointed in someone because of injury, but I'm disappointed that this 20-year-old man entering the season did not get a chance to either raise his stock or lower his stock. And just all he ended up doing throughout the entire year is making those questions that you have even more bold, even more italicized, even more, even stronger questions without providing any answers. So I'm pretty disappointed about that. I had high hopes that by this time, you know, this time I'd be able to give a better, I'd have a better feel for what Junior Fernandez is, and I don't.
Yeah, that's got to be the frustrating part of what you do is you like to think that, you know, by the end of the season you'll have a better handle on people, but isn't always the case, unfortunately. All right, well, that'll do it for tonight, and we will talk with Kyle some here in as the season winds down, and probably some in the off season, depending on trades and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure, you know, Kyle, I mean, he can talk about Ryan Helsley, you know, in the middle of winter, I'm sure, with nutty problems. So
yeah,
you know, you don't need actual games or anything to talk about these guys. So all right.
Yeah. I'll be able to talk about Ryan Helsley and Andrew Kisner until the sun goes down.
I guess. Well, before we do wrap it, because that reminded me, Arizona Fall League has, you know, they announced the players for that, I think, since the last time we talked. Big surprises there, do you think?
You know, the big one for me was John Nagowski, who, you know, they do a taxi squad thing, which means that a player will only be able to play twice a week. And John Nagowski is the taxi squad guy for Surprise, which is where the Cardinals are playing. And I'm surprised and elated for him. He only plays first base. He's not athletic enough to play anywhere else. He was playing an independent ball at the beginning of the year. The Cardinals signed him. He was drafted by the Mets a while back. He's old. I think he's like 25, you know, for a double-A level player in the Arizona Fall League. But that was what I was most surprised by. He was the only guy that ended up being sent that I hadn't even thought about. And that's also the coolest one of them all, in my opinion. I should have guessed that Jordan Hicks, when they started limiting his innings, that he was going to go. And I thought about it, but I just thought that they'd wait another year with Hicks, let him get a full year at Springfield underneath his belt, and then reassess. But it's cool to see Jordan Hicks. Josh Lucas is an unusual one for me. That tells me almost certainly he'll stay on the 40-man, which I think that there were some people thought that he might find his way off the 40-man. But, you know, he's a really interesting guy, and I'm really anxious to see how Andrew Kisner's playing time ends up shaking out. There's three catchers on that squad, on that club. And, you know, you look back a year ago when Paul DeJong went as a third baseman to the Arizona Fall League, and now he's playing every day at shortstop for the Cardinals because of that time in the Fall League. So part of me is a little interested to find out exactly what position, and it's totally total speculation, but to find out what position Andrew Kisner, who, aside from Randy Arozarena, is probably my favorite hitting prospect in the organization, where he's going to play. You know, selfishly, because I want to see Carson Kelly stay with the Cardinals, and I want to see him catching for the Cardinals in 3 years. I would love to see Kisner move to third base where he played in college, because there's an obvious long-term organizational need there, but I also think that he can play catcher, and I also think he's developing into a really solid catcher. So that's, you know, those are my quick impressions. I'm glad to see Sandy Alcantara go too. Mercado, I'm glad to see go. They've got a decision to make about him. But I really like the group they're sending, and I'm anxious to see how it goes. I'm also anxious to see with Alcantara if he's pitching out of the pen or if he's going to get some starting innings. And that really doesn't matter so much in the Arizona Fall League, because it's kind of like spring training where those guys won't go more than five innings, because there's so many guys on the roster and they're trying to get time. But yeah, that's it. Those are my impressions of what's going on with the Arizona Fall League. It's an exciting group, and I cannot wait to see how it goes.
I guess the good thing for Kinsler is that Yadier Molina is not playing on that team, so he may get a chance to play every once in a while. So, all right, well, we'll talk to Kyle as the Arizona Fall League goes and all this other stuff. But until then, Kyle, appreciate you joining me yet again.
Hey, thank you, Daniel. It's a blast.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!